Welcome back to the podcast here with Tanara Marshall. Tanara, let's talk about humor. Okay. Sometimes I think that there may be some misunderstandings about American Indian humor. Mm-hmm. I would say that it is dry, but all of that is based on ignorance on my part. What have you found in your work?
You know, I am very clear that I am not on the inside of knowing about that. And I'll just tell you a little story that explains how I think I know that. I was having dinner with an elderly Yupik Eskimo and my father. The man was a friend of my father's. So the three of us were having dinner. This was in Anchorage a few years ago. The friend was explaining how when a white man moved to his village, when this man was a young man, the white man needed some help doing something, fishing or harpooning a seal. I honestly don't remember, but I'm not joking. It could have been harpooning a seal. This was a far western Alaskan village on the Bering Sea where...
Yes, mowing his lawn or harpooning a seal.
Exactly. Anyway, he was explaining that this white man was not a good man. And I don't remember why, but he wasn't liked. I think he came in and was sort of blustery and insulting, I'm guessing. But I could imagine a situation where a really macho fisherman-type white guy shows up at a small native village and tries to be a macho white guy fisherman, and it doesn't go over really well. Anyway, I won't quote my father's friend because I don't remember how he said it, but he mentioned that when this interloper, this unpleasant visitor, asked our friend a question, our friend shrugged his shoulders and said, "I don't know." I was very young and I didn't understand that. And it was after we went home and I said, "Dad, why would a native man play the dumb Indian," which is a phrase that we use, that Indians would use, talk about playing dumb Indian, to the white man, when that only reinforces the stereotype of the dumb Indian from the white perspective? And my father said, and again, this is not verbatim, but he said, in many ways, that's the only way that some members of the community can feel like they have power. Their power is so taken away from them by the white man over the years that they play a role in the presence of strangers, at least, until they're friendly with them, and then they don't have to. That makes it very difficult for someone to really be able to make any generalizations about humor or intelligence or anything without really knowing a person. So what does that have to do with humor? It makes me very cautious about saying anything about humor because I feel like I don't know. I knew lots of kids when I was in high school there in Alaska that in retrospect, I would say the kids were just like the kids in my high school in Pittsburgh where I grew up. Some were really fun and some were really mean, and I wish I could say something more, but I just can't.
I was curious about what you may have learned from your research that points to things that would be useful for those of us who are outside of American Indian groups, that would be useful for us to understand about the need or the desire that tribal groups may have to protect their own stories.
Yeah, there are a few things that I think are important to know, and they might seem to contradict each other, but one is that Native Americans aren't a monolith. There are commonalities, I imagine, between tribes in the way that they struggle with their identity in this country. And yet, some tribes are very comfortable calling themselves members of the American Indian tribe or family. There's a Museum of the American Indian in Albuquerque, and of course the National Museum, the Smithsonian Museum of the American Indian. Yeah. Whereas I'm sure that there are a number of Native American tribal members who hate that word Indian and would prefer something else. So that's just an example of how their experiences are often shared, but their attitudes and the ways they talk about those experiences can vary greatly. So we must be careful, as we would be with all cultures, not to assume that all people think the same way. That being said, sadly, we white folks need to be very aware that we are white and we bring with our skin color to the table, to every conversation, at least for the first few months that you get to know somebody in a Native community. All of that stuff. And that's what has to be overcome. Two people can't be open and get to know each other and be comfortable with each other. That's not true. And yet, there's always this question of race. In my experience, the question of race doesn't go away.
Yes.
Until trust is there. My father lived there in Alaska for 25 years. And it depends what day you ask him, but I think there are days when he would say that he felt very comfortable and accepted in the community, and then there would be days when he said he never got in.
Yes.
Now, I'm a very sensitive person, so maybe I'm overstating the case. I wonder. Maybe there are other Anglo folks that have interacted with communities in such a way that they don't feel that it's as sensitive an issue as I think it is. But, I mean, the enormity of the situation and the current state of Indian affairs in this country, for the most part, is still shameful. You know, I don't really know how we can or what we can do other than come with respect and no expectation and no judgment and be able to walk away empty-handed and say that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I can let my research go here for a moment because that's not what's really important in the end.
What are some of the things that you've learned that have really thrown you for a loop, surprised you, things that you never thought that you would?
About American Indian or Native American dialect work?
Through the dialect research that you've done.
Well, you know, something that surprised me was I reached out to a Native American playwright, a woman who works in the Midwest, and these were the early days of the research, and I was interested in entree, as I mentioned before, just getting to know people who were perhaps in academia but also connected to a Native community. So I reached out to this woman via email, and I explained to her my project and asked her if she'd be willing to talk to me. I was interested in her feedback, but also in what communities she knew, and if she was interested in my work, maybe she'd help find me interviews. She was not interested in what I was doing. She sent me a rather curt email telling me I should go read a book called Playing Indian. The brunt of her concern was that I was collecting Native American voices to enable white people to play Native American characters.
Mm.
And, you know, after I got over the sting of that, I realized that I couldn't control who used whatever samples I shared, and that she might be right. I like to think that there are Native American actors out there who might benefit from this, but no, I couldn't protect that or control that. That knocked the wind out of my sails a little bit.
Did you read the book Playing Indian?
I did indeed. Hell yeah. It's not pretty. It's true. We have a history in film and television, not only of the cowboy and Indian good guy, bad guy thing, but of white people playing Indians. We have white people playing Asian people. I mean, 15 years ago. I mean, it's outrageous. I mean, I'm proud to say that our culture, at least the one that I live in this country, has evolved away from that kind of awful stereotyping. But so you see what I'm saying? This speaks to what I mentioned before. The years, the multitude of layers of concern and complexity just make this, it's daunting.
Yes.
I'm intrepid, and I shall continue. I think that's one reason why it's going to be a life project.
Yes.
You're not in and out.
What are some of the ways that you've, or are there ways that you've found to have this intersect with other areas of your life as an artist, aside from the educational and the, you know, just the archival aspect of it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's enabling me to interact with people and places that I wouldn't see otherwise. I mean, I have a reason now to go to Canada. I look forward to going to Canada, to other First Nations communities up there. I look forward to, as I've mentioned before, the East Coast, particularly the Cherokee tribe, but there are a lot of upstate New York tribes, upstate Wisconsin tribes, that I look forward to getting to someday and meeting. I love to travel, and for me, travel isn't really valuable and meaningful unless I'm interacting with two things when I get there, the food and the people that are from there. I learn something, and it's when I'm learning and growing. That's when I feel like I'm living.
And it doesn't count if you go to the Starbucks and the person who is your barista there?
Why not?
Does that count?
But absolutely. It's just too bad we don't all have badges on that say, "Hi, I'm Tanara, and I'm Native American from the Onondaga tribe." I wish I could. You know what, actually, now that you mention it, at the University of Illinois at Chicago, where I teach, there is a Native American student center. Mm-hmm. I've gone to a number of their events and met with the director, and for various reasons, that relationship hasn't really grown. It's been hard for me to enter into that community, even though it's a Chicago-based community. Chicago is a you know, major metropolis for a lot of Midwestern and Plains.
Yes.
Tribal students. So it's not easy.
How do sounds from indigenous populations in Hawaii and then through Central America and South America fit into the research that you're doing?
They could. I mean, there could be no end to my... But I could go broad or I could go deep.
Yeah.
And I think I want to go deep, meaning I think I want to stick to what we think of as Native American, Native North American, maybe even U.S. focused, mm-hmm. because it's the displacement of those populations in this country that is the legacy that I think of as my legacy.
Yes.
And is the kind of legacy that playwrights in this country will be thinking about when they write plays that include Native American characters.
Yes.
So I'll leave that to the generations that follow. Going down south of the border.
One other question that I'd like to ask you, based on something that you brought up before in terms of the playwright that you encountered, would there be a possibility for you and this playwright or other artists, Native American artists, to collaborate in some way, to focus some of the issues perhaps, to create bridges perhaps?
I think so, yeah, Jerome. I think it's a wonderful question. I think that there's... it would be a wonderful next step to help create that environment where the work that I'm doing is going to be used by Native actors or helpful to Native playwrights when they're writing. It would be easy for this work to become an activist endeavor for me. Already you can tell there's a certain amount of activism in me that I'm interested in exploring, and mm-hmm. that motivates this project. It would be really easy, though, for this to become, the activism part, to become the main thrust of the project. And right now, anyway, that's not where I want to go. I'm interested in collecting dialects and helping actors be selective and thoughtful in the way that they create work. And in creating a library, I can help enrich and deepen that experience, the creative process. In my next life, or maybe when I get tired of this one that I'm living, I might go in that direction. I might reach out to that playwright again someday and say, you know what, I've done this research and now I want to do some work that's meaningful and give back to the community that's been so giving to me, and maybe go there. There aren't enough years in a lifetime.
Well, that, I think, is a fitting note to bring our conversation, at least for now, to a close. I certainly think that there's a whole lot more that we can talk about. There's a whole lot more about your work outside of this archival inquiry that and collection that you're curating. You need to come back to the program. That's really what I'm saying.
I would love to. And can we have martinis?
Yes, absolutely. We certainly could. Thank you so much for taking the time and for being on the program today. It's been a joy to speak with you. And if there was a studio audience here, they would be on their feet right now, putting their hands together for Tanara Marshall. Thanks, everybody, for tuning into the podcast. And remember, it's Father's Day, and in the words of James R. Jordan, Michael Jordan's father, it's never too late to do anything you want to do. You never know what you can accomplish until you try. See you next time.
Thanks, Jerome.